This is Fresh Air. The Soviet Union has offered Iraq a peace plan. The details haven't been made public, but it reportedly calls for Iraq to withdraw from Kuwait while safeguarding Iraq's borders and Saddam Hussein's government. Iraq's foreign minister, Tariq Aziz, has taken the plan back to Baghdad. President Bush has already rejected it, saying it falls short of what would be required to stop the war. Why is the Soviet Union trying to lead the way in negotiating a peace? And do the Soviets' goals in the Middle East coincide or conflict with America's? We called Fred Halliday in London. He's a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics and the author of a recent book on Soviet-American relations called From Kabul to Managua. Halliday has written extensively on the Cold War and the Third World for The Nation and the Middle East Report. He told me he thinks the Soviets have several motives in trying to broker a peace plan.
I think, first of all, they're worried about a major American military campaign and presence so near their frontiers. After all, we're talking about a theater of war that's less than 300 miles in the territory of the Soviet Union. So if you can imagine the Soviet forces of 500,000 and their coalition conducting a campaign in central Mexico or in the central Caribbean, I think you can imagine the kind of anxiety this would produce in the United States. And this is important not just for geographic reasons, but also because of the symbolic importance of having the rival power able to operate so near your frontiers. Second reason is that there's a lot of opposition inside the Soviet Union to the policy which Gorbachev pursued. This opposition says that they've given away too much to the Americans, and they've gone along with the anti-Iraqi campaign too much. Part of this is a reflection of the fact that the military feel they gave away too much in Eastern Europe. They basically abandoned Eastern Europe. They agreed to the reunification of Germany and the evacuation of Germany, and they simply got nothing in return for the West. It all went one way. So they're now looking for another issue in which to put their foot down. They also feel that Iraq was a Soviet ally. It was an ally with which the Soviet military had close ties. And they don't want to see those abandoned. And it's interesting that the pressure to step up support for Iraq has come at the same time as the military have been pushing their case in the Baltic republics. It's part of the same situation. It's part of the same pressure by what are called the Black Colonels to get a change in Soviet domestic and foreign policy as a whole. I think the third factor is more neutral, like, that were Gorbachev to get a solution to the Gulf War that saved the need for a very bloody land battle, then he hopes he might get some credit in the West for this. He might emerge as a peacemaker, as an important actor in the Middle East, and that this would help him to recover from the very damaging few months he's had with the Baltic states and the other developments inside the Soviet Union.
From what we know, the Soviet peace proposal would preserve Saddam Hussein's government without any punishment. Do you think the Soviet Union and the United States have different goals for the Middle East, different war goals?
Well, the Soviet Union has never supported the ousting of Saddam Hussein, and that's because they think that once he's ousted, it will create more trouble than if he stays. Soviet argument was always, we don't like him, you don't like him, we know what he's like, but the fact is, look what will happen in the country if he goes. There'll be civil war, there'll be all sorts of factions vying for power, as you had in Iraq in the 1960s, and you'll have a number of regional powers piling in, Turkey, Iran, the Arabs, possibly even Israel, and this will lead to greater instability. You'll have a huge Lebanon there on the edge of the oil-rich Persian Gulf. So it's better not to oust this regime, which at least has kept some kind of order, but to try and contain it and try and learn from past mistakes which have built it up unnecessarily.
But the United States seems to want Saddam Hussein out. So do you see this as a big conflict between the U.S. and the Soviet Union?
There is no doubt in my mind that the Bush administration wants Saddam and his regime destroyed. This was not a goal before the 2nd of August, despite Saddam's claim that it was. I doubt whether it was even a very clearly articulated goal when the original deployments, the Desert Shield, got going, but it's become a goal in the weeks leading up to the January the 17th start of hostilities, and even more so afterwards. The goals which the United States has articulated of reducing Iraq's military threat to the region and of integrating Iraq into some more harmonious and calculable Middle Eastern military or security structure, those are incompatible with Saddam remaining in power in Iraq, and everybody knows that. As for the situation now, I think the United States will have had to make a very difficult choice, and that choice is, do they go for a land offensive that will be costly in Western lives, or runs the risk of being so, including the use of chemical weapons, in order to destroy Saddam, or do they save lives, including American, British, and other lives, in return for allowing Saddam basically to get away with it, which is what, in some measure, he'll do. Now, one has no way of knowing as of yet what decision the United States has taken, but presumably a decision will have been taken, and I would doubt whether the United States would be willing to accept any policy that allowed Saddam basically to get away with it.
The United States wants Saddam Hussein out of power. The Soviet Union wants to keep Saddam Hussein in power. Can you explain why the Soviets see Saddam Hussein as a stabilizing force in the Middle East, while the United States sees Saddam Hussein as destroying the balance in the Middle East?
The Soviet view of Saddam is that he may have been destabilizing the Middle East, but he's not been destabilizing in Iraq, and that the alternative to having him in power in Iraq is to have civil war, chaos, and a lot of conflict within the country. So in that situation, it's better to keep him than to return to the sort of Lebanon-like situation, which he threatened to have in Iraq in the 1960s after the fall of the monarchy and before Saddam and his people came to power. The other factor is that as far as the military in the Soviet Union are concerned, Saddam remains some kind of remote cousin. He was somebody they supported. Most of his arms came from there. A lot of his officers were trained in the Soviet Union. And they would like to see him remain for that reason, particularly as they believe that he will have, after this war, to listen much more closely to his military. What does that mean? It means that, in effect, power in Iraq may shift from Saddam to a group of generals who are Soviet-trained. And the possibility is there, and one that the Russians are very well aware of, that if Saddam is either tamed or ultimately removed from power, he will be replaced not by a pro-Western democratic regime or by a pro-Western military junta, but by a pro-Soviet military regime. And that's something they would clearly like to see very much. I guess it's something that George Bush must have on his mind very much. Russians have much more contact with the Iraqi military than the West has, and that's something the Russians will play on.
My guest is Fred Halliday, a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Fred Halliday is my guest. He's a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics. He's written extensively about the Middle East, and he's writing now about post-Cold War politics, and he's joining us from his office in London. The Soviets armed Iraq and trained a lot of the Iraqi military in how to use those arms. What were the reasons for the Soviet-Iraqi alliance? How did they come to be aligned?
The Soviets began to support Iraq after the revolution of 1958, which ousted a pro-British monarchy. And they did so because they regarded Iraq as a progressive country. It nationalized its oil, carried out a land reform, was talking about building some kind of socialism. It was opposed to Western influence in the region, and it bought a lot of Soviet arms. So for all those reasons, ideological, strategic, and commercial, Iraq was a convenient state with which the Soviet Union could ally. And it was one of the dozen or so countries in the world, in the Third World, that were seen by the Russians as not yet communist or even socialist, but as being what they used to call socialist-oriented, as being like Nicaragua or Angola, Mozambique, Ethiopia, as a country which could become a socialist country, could become a country like Eastern Europe in time. And they supported it for that reason, in addition to the other more tangible advantages which it brought.
Do you see the Soviet interest in trying to broker a peace being a sign of post-Cold War politics or a return to the Cold War?
Cold War can't return for one very simple reason. The Cold War rested upon a rivalry of two roughly equal competing blocs, the Soviet bloc and the American bloc. The Soviet bloc isn't there anymore, and therefore you can't have a Cold War. It doesn't mean that there aren't conflicts between Russia or the Soviet Union and the West. Doesn't mean that certain old ideological and organizational forces don't return. We've seen this at the KGB, the Party Conservatives, the Red Army, and so forth. But frankly, you can't have a return to the Cold War as a global system of rivalry because the Russians can't sustain it globally. So yes, there are issues there, but it's a bit like saying, you know, is British resistance to some American policies a return to the British Empire? Well, the British Empire is dead and gone. Good riddance to it. But there are still ways in which Britain and the United States conflict over trade policy or third world policy, which reflect older conflicts, and I think that's what you're seeing now in the case of the Soviet Union. So the Soviet Union is not prepared to simply kiss America's hand and say, yes, we agree to everything you want to do in the Gulf. That would be unreal. And with the polarization of the situation inside Russia, this resistance is increasing. But it's not a return to the Cold War. It's a return to, or an advancement onto, a different kind of great power conflict and rivalry, which is one that the United States has with Japan or Germany or France or Britain or anyone else.
We've talked a little bit about what the United States government and the Soviet government want from Iraq in the future. I'm wondering if you think it's dangerous to leave Saddam Hussein in power. What you personally think of that?
Well, I have been in favor of the ouster of Saddam Hussein for many years. I think that he is a fascist. I think he is a disaster for the Iraqi people, and he's a disaster for the region. And that is the reason why I think that the war against Saddam Hussein is on balance justified. I think the moral justifications produced by the United States and Britain for this war are bogus. They've distorted the UN. It clearly has got a lot to do with oil. Their own moral credentials for stopping anyone doing anything are pretty weak given their own international record. Even such a thing as ecological crimes. We hear a lot about the Iraqis polluting the Gulf. Let's remember who polluted Vietnam with Agent Orange and the rest of it. And not to mention all the forests destroyed in Europe by the British during the First World War. So there's a lot of nonsense talked on the coalition side, but the core issue is Saddam. And in my view, he's a very dangerous man. He's dangerous for his country, dangerous internationally. And there was really only two choices. One was to let him stay in Kuwait, and the other was to fight to get him out. Talk of negotiations was a waste of time. He wasn't interested in negotiating. As for sanctions, I did think they could work, but having seen the kind of resistance he's put up now and realizing that after 3 years he could have got his agriculture going again, I don't think that sanctions would have worked. So the issue is Saddam. He's made it the issue, and in that sense, it should be seen through to the end.
So if you were consulting with the American government, you'd recommend that they not accept the Soviet peace proposal?
Well, I'd start by consulting with the Kuwaiti government and the other Arab governments in the region, and with the Iranian government, and who have the special interest, and the Turkish government, and they hold the same view, and the Egyptian government, and they're quite widely supported by their own people. I don't think the United States on its own has any legitimation going in there, but the fact is, it is the wish and the interest of many people in the area that this should happen. And I would say, although you can't prove it at the moment, that many Iraqis hold this view as well. Of course, they don't like the destruction of their country, but their view is Saddam is a disaster for their country. And if it has to be that a war will oust him, so be it. A similar attitude was held by many Germans during the Second World War, who bitterly regretted what happened to their country, but faced with the option of this dreadful tyrant staying in power, accepted the need for a war. It doesn't mean that they'd accepted the moral claims made by the Allied forces, after all. People get very worked up about the motives of Bush and the British in this war. I've got no problem with this. Winston Churchill fought the Second World War to preserve the British Empire. Joseph Stalin did to preserve his terroristic regime in Russia and impose it on Eastern Europe. Roosevelt's motives were a little bit better, but they had not a little to do with rivaling the Japanese over oil in the Far East. So the motivations of all these people are pretty disgusting and morally inconsistent, but that isn't the point. The point is, what is going to do less damage to the people of the region? That, to me, is a key question. And in my view, given what Saddam has done and what's likely to do, he had to be stopped in the interest of the peoples of the Middle East. Forget about the rest of the world.
One last question. Do you think that the peace in the Middle East will not only help define the future of the West's relationship with the East, but do you think it will also help define the future of the West's relationship with the Soviet Union?
No, I think at very best, if in the next day or two some solution is cobbled together for which the Russians take credit, this will improve Soviet-American relations for a while, for some months. But the United States is not going to give the Soviet Union credit for the ending of the Gulf War. They're going to give themselves credit and their allies for having put pressure on Iraq. Moreover, the deterioration in Soviet-American relations is above all due to the deterioration within the Soviet Union itself, plus the fact that the West has defeated the Soviet Union in the Cold War and doesn't have to take much notice of what the Soviet Union thinks anymore. So for those two reasons, this sharper relation between Russia and the West will, I think, continue. I think one of the most interesting questions is whether the war in the Gulf will lead to a renegotiation or change in relations between the United States and its other major capitalist trading partners. After all wars involve not just relations between the victors and the vanquished, but a shifting of position between the victors. Look at the way that the First and Second World War alters relations between Britain and the United States. And I think one of the consequences of this war will be a very much more assertive attempt by the United States to improve its position vis-a-vis its other major industrial trading partners, Japan, Germany, and so forth. There'll be a lot of talk about people who didn't pay up, about people who didn't fight, about the need for bills to be presented, about if not about linkage, then at least about leverage. This is going to be as interesting an issue as any. I don't hold to the view that the war is simply an attempt by the United States to improve its hegemonic position vis-a-vis other major capitalist countries, but this is certainly part of the story and will be part of the aftermath.
Fred Halliday is a professor of international relations at the London School of Economics and author of the book From Kabul to Managua about Soviet-American relations. This is Fresh Air.